It's amazing that you've been able to fuse what some people would consider dialectics in your talent, being a visually oriented person and a word and musically oriented person. That would tear some people apart at some points in their development, trying to decide which way to go.
Well,
and with you, it's worked for you.
Sometimes it feels like they're all different. They're really different insanities, each one of those pursuits, you know.
Yeah.
Three entirely different heads. And sometimes, you know, you think, oh, you know, you're never going to be masterful at anything. You know, you're never going to know it all because there's just not enough time in the lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, film is the only thing, really.
What is?
Film, like movie making, you know.
Yeah.
Has to either put together a team to pull all that together, you know, or have the overview for all of it. I mean, that's...
I know what you're saying. I started in this business as a dancer, and I used to write in journals and write poetry, and a part of me was very oriented towards visual and kinetic forms, and another part of me was very oriented towards written forms, and one seemed to be temporal and ephemeral, and the other seemed to be kind of intellectual and tying reality down and defining it, and, you know, somehow putting it into words. And I kept trying to figure out which way I was going to go. And one of the things that I came across was film, because it has everything. I mean,
yeah.
It's a moving canvas, and it has narrative, and it has all those intellectual, narrative, literary connotations, and the aural stuff, too. And the movement, which is just real primal, I think, to people, to watch somebody move and go through movement.
You know, I suppose there are films that have been made, you know, maybe they show, you know, underground in places that I don't know about, but, you know, like, there's a kind of film that I haven't really seen, you know, like in the commercial arena. I've seen poetic commercial films, great moments of it, but I don't know whether it would even sustain. You might be just too, I don't know, too or something.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever wanted to make a film?
Yeah, but I think, you know, the kind of film that I want to make, you know, I don't know where you put it. You know, it would be expensive, and it wouldn't. You know, that's the thing about film is like it's a big money gamble.
Yeah,
you know, and you
yeah.
have to get investors, and investors they want to see return. And some of the ideas, you know, you have to figure out a way to do it on a real shoestring. You know, almost do the ideas in the crude manifestation of them, and be happy with that. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they would be best suited to the whole. Slick or elegant, a state-of-the-art situation, but they...
Yeah, you lose your control.
Where would they go, you know? I mean, who would come to look at them? But they would incorporate passages, sequences of textural movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I got a Super 8 camera in Milano I've been shooting out the window, and I get, like, rushes off of the random effect of cars going by out open windows, like, where occasionally a driver turns his face to the lens.
Mm-hmm.
Or an orange car follows a green car, follows you know, just the random color of, you know, of the machinery as it goes by.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that, you know. So
sounds like a Yoko Ono film.
Yeah, and yet, you know, or like Warhol's Sleep, 24 Hours on the Empire State Building. You know, almost a realm of the absurd, you know, like it's so personal.
Yeah.
But I still think, like, that's like fine art, right? Like what they call fine art, because it's like so individuated that...
Yeah, without commercial potential so often.
But I still think that somehow or other, you know, because film has got to evolve and people are used to some commercials. They've assimilated real short hits of those kind of things.
Yeah.
But you know, the temptation is like how to expand it so you'd...
Well, I think film is amazingly interesting to me, and I've never been able to figure out, again, the money situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a dancer, I always had film students in college asking me if I would be in their, I don't know, you know, if I would just dance and they could take pictures of me. They did some really interesting stuff. It was their project, though, and I got some ideas from that. But it just, something about that moving canvas and how you sculpt it, it leaves so many options that you can't do in reality. You know, kinds of colors you can't mix.
Yeah.
Things that you can't do because of gravity as a dancer, or things that you physically couldn't do for 30 minutes straight, but you can edit it so it looks like you did.
Right.
Yet you lose a certain amount of control as well. And that live quality also. There's some, even the best films with the that just feel like they're just, you know, hugging you when you're watching them. They still have that distant effect, which I don't know if we'll ever get to that point. I don't think people have gotten into 3D ever got anywhere closer to us in our seats, you know.
Yeah, there's no, it still is like, you know, just an imitation of our, of life, you know. Like, so, you know, that's the thing, the way I see, my eyes, like often the composition is at its most interesting from peripheral to peripheral,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and by the time you zero in on a shot, there's a million ways to frame things up, really.
Yeah, and the choices are all left up to the director and the cameraman, whereas, you know, when you're doing a canvas, when you're doing a dance, you have different parameters. The camera dictates what you see, and there's less choices.
There are, you know.
Which is what abstract art has become about, to me, is that Jackson Pollock leaves loads of choices,
mm-hmm.
you know. With blank canvases, you can see all kinds of things, the color of light hitting the canvas, and where you're standing, and what your mood happens to be that day, and kind of invites the viewer to invent his own painting rather than kind of spoon feed you what he wants you to see. But we're really getting off here, aren't we?
Yeah, this is some deep shit, Debbie.
I know. I'm real eclectic. I kind of have this thing. That's why I went into journalism, because I found that I could write about anything.
Yeah.
And rather than having to decide if I wanted to stay being a dancer or not, I could use writing to just explore the whole world with and meet all kinds of people. And so that's what I do. I just connect everything as much as I can, and then I pull it apart again and see what happens. But the next thing I want to ask you, somebody said that they think you did a video, an MTV video. Did you do an MTV video?
We did. At rehearsal, we filmed three songs, and I think they used two. One of them, you know, we just did live performances rather than lip sync. We did just straight ahead, overhead lighting. We didn't, you know, they were good performances. And
but this wasn't one of those connived little short story things.
We didn't use those things. Like, it's such a great opportunity, but there's always the woman in the stiletto heels stepping on the guy's hand, looking down, you know.
It's driving me crazy.
And blood, I mean, like, the posturing, the general attitude, you know, the beautiful man-eater syndrome.
Uh-huh.
I talked, like, with guys at a certain stage about making a video, and the ideas that they came up with were, like, made my blood run cold.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like, you know, they were so, they took any, you know, they pushed it over, like, into some other... So we just ended up, like, going with something real simple, and I...
Is that airing now in the States? I mean, is it being distributed?
I didn't know it was on TV. It was on... I don't know where it's gone, but it's on Home Box Office or Z or one of the LA channels. They're using them, you know, like, they use shorts.
Uh-huh, but it's not on MTV, right?
I don't know about that.
You
that I didn't
know.
Hear.
Hmm. Because I hate that stuff. I mean, I don't watch it. I can't stand to watch it. It's like, when radio, television took over radio, you know, when you could listen to a radio show and they were talking about the boogeyman, I mean, the boogeyman in my mind was so much worse. I mean, just my imagination went wild, the kind of boogeyman that I could create from listening to a drama over a radio. And then when you get TV, you see the boogeyman in person. You know, it's kind of like Hitchcock, and then I see MTV and I hear these songs that's made my imagination go crazy, and then what they do, you know, what's in front of my eyes has nothing to do with what I felt, and it ruins it for me.
Well, that's it. Like, my girlfriend and I we had a bailout. The last tour I did, we did a film of it, and the way it was shot, you know, like, there was, you know, they turned the event into a one-man show. When it was, for me, editing, it was, like, really pretty dull. Like, I thought, gee, you know, it's like, we got to have some more pictures in this thing. So we had no budget. We raided old film libraries. We raided movie outtakes. We took old films and we cut things in to augment illustration. I found out a lot about that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're talking about it, didn't always work, but sometimes if you're talking about an object and you show the object,
mm-hmm.
it would, like, kill it. It was like the doubling up of it was insulting somehow or other.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
So you had to, like, instead of, and they don't usually do this, they put it pretty literally together, you know.
They do. They're singing, "We're driving down the street," and you see them driving down the street, where when I hear "driving down the street," I mean, I can feel all kinds of things, like I'm moving, or I feel all revved up and ready to go.
Or you might even do, like, 50 different flash shots of different drives, like real fast in your mind. And any time you listen to it, those 50 could shuffle up and be different, you know. So, like, the best thing is that I found out about film then was, like, trying to, more like dance, is, like, to get into movement, like, okay, put in a moving picture, I don't know of what, you know, something that augments but doesn't rob, like, you never see, like, Coyote, for instance. We did a film of Coyote, and that was the first thing that I shot and directed, and I didn't know what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I did know enough to try and keep Coyote's face abstracted to eyes only.
Mm-hmm.
So you never saw the whole face, so whoever your Coyote was, you wasn't completely robbed of him, you know?
Mm-hmm. The viewer still had their imagination could work.
It pushed the whole thing into, like, melodrama. It made, like, and took all the levity out of the song. So we went to National Geographic and we got this footage. I said, could we see all of your Coyote footage, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they happened to need to use Big Yellow Taxi for something.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a perfect barter opportunity. So they said, we'll trade you if you find anything, you know. So I found this footage of a coyote chasing a mouse against snow. So it was, like, very Japanese. It was all white background.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, like, the mouse runs into a snowbank.
Mm-hmm.
And the coyote sticks his nose in the hole, and, like, so we put that over peeking through keyholes and numbered doors, where before we had a hotel room with a door on it, literally.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then it says, and he drags me out on the dance floor, and the coyote, like, hits the snowbank with his paw. He lifts his paw and whacks it, and the mouse goes up in the air, like, in an arc and drops down, and then he chases him.
Mm-hmm.
We cut all that in, and when people first saw it, they didn't realize that they could laugh. Like, there would
mm-hmm.
be, you know, and it just turned out beautiful, I think,
and
that way you didn't ever have to give up, you know, your own romance concerning the piece.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, that song.
Oh, you like that one?
I love that song. I love that and Song of Sharon. I wrote those, I typed those words out for my aunt.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I did. My aunt and I have gotten really close as we've gotten older. We seem to be going through the same stages of life now.
Right.
And she's in her mid-40s or something like that, and she's not married. And I don't know, that song just seemed to say it to me, how I feel sometimes and how she feels sometimes and the things we talk about. And, you know, the ideas about your independence and your growth and things like that, but you want to share it with somebody, but it just doesn't seem to work out. And then you reflect back on what you thought love was going to be and what now seems like it. You don't want to be cynical and you don't want to be bitter either. But
yeah, you still want to keep going for it.
Yeah, well, I still keep going for it.
Yeah.
I'm just a fool, you know. I people keep saying, toughen up, Debbie, you know, develop calluses. But I say, oh, but, you know, when it feels real good, I couldn't feel as much. So I'll just burn and you know, feel great sometimes, too.
So you're still here. You've just gone for the big dynamic.
Yeah, it's exciting. The roller coaster is more exciting. It really is than having, you know, some kind of, you know, heavy cement shoes on that are real safe. Forget that. But we're going all over the place here. I got to make sure I ask you some questions that.
Okay, we should. I guess I got to wrap pretty soon.
I know you do.
But I'm enjoying this. This is very good interview.
Oh, this is fun. This is a lot of fun. I'm having a great time. Let's see. Back down to earth here. Let's see. I read somewhere that you said that you felt like you were older in your 20s than you are now. I don't know if you recall saying that, but it really struck me as real interesting.
Well, you know, like that, those times were pretty difficult, and, you know, we, the singer-songwriter, the poets of that time, inherited a lot of responsibility, ludicrous responsibility. We were told that we could change the world, right?
Yeah.
You know, that'll make you old, and, you know how presidents, like, go gray overnight, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was partly the times, and partly I think that, you know, the longer you live, like, all of the ages that you've been, like, and will be, come in and out on you, almost like premonitions. And, you know, I can be walking down the street, like today I'm in a really good mood, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my legs want to gangle, you know what I mean? Like, I want to suddenly break into dance in the middle
mm-hmm.
of the street and look at things that aren't there
mm-hmm.
and stare at people with my mouth open. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, it's like a three-year-old head or a seven-year-old
mm-hmm.
head or... Parts, I don't think, they seem to come out like old acid flashes on you from time to time. And old age, too, you know, like some days, you know, you start thinking, not decrepitly, but like with resignation or moods come over you that feel like central casting is called upon you to play out the old lady zone or the, you know?
Sounds like you're younger than that now, like that song.
Yeah, I think I feel a lot more, you know.
You sound happier
these
days, and maybe not as serious. Maybe it just isn't, maybe you just can't figure it all out sometimes.
Yeah,
you just gotta be.
Yeah, exactly.
At least that's what I've come up with. I just be. I'm not sure I have a definite handle on this album, but let me tell you what I think so far. It sounds like some of it is reflecting back to older material, some of it. There's a song, You Dream Flat Tires.
Right.
And that sounds like it's about romantic failures.
Yeah.
And like Man to Man is kind of this look back at the female Don Juan, kind of wondering, can I settle down? What I'm saying is that in the album I'm hearing these upbeat kind of songs that are saying I can make a commitment, I want to make a commitment, I can deal with the compromises now. But there's some looking back there, still some material that deals with romantic failures.
Well, you know, the collection comes from a period, over a period of 3 years also.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all written at different times. And anyway, you know, you can hit a mood. I could hit a mood tomorrow in the middle of, you know, and bring out of it a song, just like you'd write a short story about something that happened to you when you were 17, that the tone would have no bearing on my present thought if I didn't will it that way, you know, if I didn't allow myself to go back and reflect on.
Well, generally, do you think you're going to start writing more upbeat material or stay in that vein?
I don't think so. I mean, no, I think, you know, I think all of those things will come and go, you know. I mean, because there's that many moods and places to reflect on. I'm gonna, you know, I still will draw a lot on past experience and I don't know really where the poetic content is going to go. The next project, I've got a couple of things in the can, and they seem to be mostly about advertising seduction. You know, just coincidentally, you know, that's what they've come out about.
Do you think marriage is going to change what kind of material you write? Well, I mean, will you, how do I put this? Will you stop writing the I'm disappointed in love songs and write,
No, I don't think so. You know, I think in a way that's my forte. If a new twist on it came along, I mean, I wouldn't want to just repeat myself. You know, if I wrote something and said, well, I've written this before or better, there's no new insights into this, you know, it would be no point. But, I don't know, it's hard to really say ahead of time those things. It's easier to look back over it, you know. I think of Picasso's work, like, you know, so influenced each period by the women that he was with.
Oh, he was such a womanizer.
and the women that dominated every period, you know, like, produced a different kind of art, you know. And Jacqueline, which was probably his best soul match, the last one really had more feminine aesthetic, that more voluptuousness and roundness and all the angles of, I forget, the first woman, the dancer that he lived with, who was pretty shrewish, you know, all those angular ones of women with their tongues out, you know, screaming and weeping, and all of that disappeared. But I think that in a softened way showed up too in later things, almost like maybe he woke up one day and thought about her. You know,
Do you think you'll continue in this jazz idiom? I mean, you seem like you're really sticking with that. I mean, I'm not asking for, you know, crystal ball things, but maybe just some sensations you have.
I tell you what I think about jazz in general. Like any other idiom, there's only a certain amount of it that really, that you love, you know, and the rest of it owing to your ignorance, your inability to get just the different wavelength of it. It doesn't have a voice for you. It might be great to someone else. It might be just strike the perfect chord in them, you know. So there may be a lot in the world of jazz that I haven't either grasped or hit that chord or begun to appreciate. But I really, aside from the open voicings and the spontaneity, the improvisational, the surprise element of players playing along and stumbling onto something you know, wonderful, whimsical, passionate, you know, the surprise element of it appeals to me more than rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
But the groove and the simplicity of rock and roll is increasingly appealing to me. So, you know, it's kind of like, well, I love daffodils and I love gardenias. You know, I have no real, I don't belong to one camp or the other. You know, I'm critical of a lot of things, and jazz is not a lot of it. Now, having explored it for several years, you know, 5, 6 years, a lot of it becomes common to me now. Like, there's nothing there for me to incorporate into my own music. You know, every once in a while you come upon something that's uncommon, like Jaco, you know, when I first met him, like, you know, he's like radical change in that end of the music. Wayne Shorter, who's just classically exquisite, you know, is always, I'll never get sick of him. I mean, he, even in what he does, he's like constantly surprising to me, even though...
Well, it sounds like you like that combination of surprise and improvisation and kind of go where you feel like going.
Like,
and
it,
also that rhythmic, you know, predictability of rock that we never seem to tire of, the 2-4 time.
Yeah, I like that. I like it kind of anchored, and but I can't give up the other part of it, because that's like, it's the mystic or something. You know, if it gets all too figured out, prefigured out, and logical, it's sort of... process. It just takes some fun out of the process.
Tell me, is Wild Things Run Fast about you?
It's not, it's just fiction.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's just a vignette. You know, like, a lot of those things are fictional. They're just, you know, I heard the heater cutting in and out myself, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was in the storm, but nothing surrounding it. You know, it was just more or less a dream.
But that's real different from what you used to do. I mean, what you used to do was so confessional, right?
A lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, and you've really pulled back a lot now. Is that a true statement? Have I got that right?
Well, I think if I had something, you know, I'm willing still, like, you know, there's still some confessional material on that attitude.
Mm-hmm.
There's some vulnerability, like, I'd rather put myself, like, in a vulnerable position in the song, if I think that by being that sacrificial lamb, I serve some purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
If it really kind of embarrasses me to say some things, often that's when I should leave it in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in Man to Man, there's a line, now, what is it? I sure can be phony when I get scared. I thought, oh, gee, why do I don't really... You know, in rock and roll, you stand up and bluff, you know, how good you are in bed or something. You know, why do I want to get up here and... say, you know, like, there are times when I can be phony, who wants to admit that? But the first time that I performed it was up at the Berklee Festival. When I sang it, there was a gasp, an audible gasp went up from the audience that was both male and female, and it put a shiver down my spine. I thought, you know, well, this line has got to be left in. It obviously
catches people. Yeah,
it releases something. It has a power. Not in the cynic, not in an intellectual, you know. It won't do anything for them. They'll throw it back on me and just take it literally. You know, she's a phony, you know. But in those people, it has the power to make people see something about themselves and feel relief.
Yeah.
So those kind of things, you know, or there's another one in Betsy's Blues in Moon at the Window that's like that. You know, like we're about being hard on ourselves. Those things, I think, you know, that's like I'm okay, you're okay stuff. You know, I think that's good. I think that's riches. And, you know, I think literature is still discovering its, you know, like, since people don't read, you know, since literary, literature is becoming an elite climate.
Oh, it always was for a long time, except from Elizabethan times, I guess, or Romantic times, or Victorian times, when people sat around and read it to each other. But again, people said, you know, literature was dead, too. They said painting was dead before the German Expressionists came along.
Right.
Now, I don't know. It's a weird time to live in when you're growing up and you find out that all the things that you're so excited about, people are saying were dead, you know, years before you were born.
You know, like people who love the swing band stuff.
Yeah, it can't be dead. I mean, nothing else, it just recycles itself. There's no such thing as death. But anyway, I've got to let you rest. And this is your night off, I heard.
Yeah.
So go have fun. And I just enjoy talking to you.
I really have.
I'm really nice?
You know, it was a really nice conversation. I mean, I enjoyed the conversation.
Great. Thank you. I did, too. I really did. I hope I can meet you. I don't know how I can do that.
Are you coming to the show?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm coming to the show, but I don't know how I can get to you. Maybe you could give me your autograph or something corny like that.
Well, Charlie, you know, we could arrange a backstage pass or something for you, although, you know, those things, you know, you're just looking at, like, a sweaty, kind of wrung-out creature, but, you know, just come back and say hello and...
Okay.
Okay.
How do I do that? Do I find Charlie?
I'll tell Charlie now, you know, and we'll arrange something.
Okay, good, because I'd really like to meet you and do that corny thing about getting your autograph.
Okay,
I'll find something neat for you to write it on.
Okay, like a picture of a dancer or something.
Hey! Okay, a picture of a dancer
picture
that reminds
of
me of you. A picture of me dancing. I've got one of those.
Okay.
Okay, Johnny, thank you so much. Have a good time tonight.
All right, Derry, thanks.
All right, relax your vocal cords for a while.
Yeah, I won't even talk now.
I have that effect on people. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. I said I'm